At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Brian Koberger, well, of course, there's more to talk about here. Now, with more than 500 photos from Koberger's WSU apartment and his Elantra, now public, we're left with an interesting picture to look at. On one side, ordinary grad student life, textbooks, exams, even birthday cards from his parents and sister arriving just days after the murders. On the other, investigators bagging hair strands, photographing stained bedding and combing through his car. We're going to dig into what these images actually show us and how they shape our understanding of who Koberger was behind closed doors. Joining me to do just that, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. Jen, we've now seen the photos inside the lair or the love den of Brian Koberger, whatever we want to call it. Anything standing out to you?
I mean, really what stood out to me, and I tried to point this out, I'm not sure if I did a great job at it, but basically the areas where he would be, where his body would have been after the crimes, any place he would have touched in that sort of regard, like his bed, his living room, where was he? Seemed very clean. What really I found interesting was his pantry, his icebox, other areas that were just completely disheveled. What it showed to me was that it seemed that he was very OCD, if you will, when it came to cleanup, but probably not that OCD. And I'm using that as a term to mean, you know, concerned about how things are kept. Mm-hmm. He didn't seem to be that way with his normal routine.
That stood out to me as well. And I know you tweeted about it too, because we look at so many things about him and we think, oh gosh, he must be so OCD the way he wants to control everything. And we've even seen that footage from inside his cell, his Crocs lined up very neatly. Things are very much in their place. But when we got a chance to see inside his house, fairly unextraordinary, not a whole lot on the walls, if anything at all, but yeah, I mean, the kitchen was kind of in disarray. The cupboards were kind of in disarray. Were you surprised by that?
I really was. And of course, many of us have watched that footage in his cell, as you mentioned, you know, his shoes all lined up. He's cleaning about. He's lining everything up. Listen, I understand that there's multiple layers to a true diagnosis of being OCD, but I'm talking about somebody who, when it came to cleaning up after this crime, wow, this was somebody who was organized and methodical and couldn't clean enough. And so to me, that stuck out as him trying to cover everything up.
Does it also show, I mean, they always say, you know, like things around you are kind of a reflection of what's in your head, as scientific as of saying that is, I know. But it is, I think, somewhat true. If things are kind of in disarray around you, oftentimes it does kind of reflect what may be going on with one personally. Do you think that the disarray in this area that was just the closest to Brian Koberger, nobody else is interacting with his, you know, can of Pringles and chips and things that are sitting around the house other than him, but all those things that were just meant for him, just only for him to see, only for him to be concerned with, bothered by, consumed, whatever, all of that was in a disarray, while all of the forward-sitting things, the forward-focusing things that people can see on the outside were not. It really kind of showed an interesting, you know, on the inside, he didn't seem to be in all that of an organized human being.
Well, I truly think that nexus had to do with the cleanup. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at his bathroom. Oh, my goodness. I mean, and I mean, it was unbelievable. And yeah, juxtapose that, like I tried to do, to the cupboard. And to me, it just pointed out that when he cared about something being perfect and in order, because he was probably worried about, could there be blood spatter or other hairs or anything else? I'm going to get this cleaned up methodically. But where I don't think it could be, I don't think he gave a crap.
Now, we've seen, you know, the stained bedding and bagged hairs documented. When they went into this this scene, how are they deciding what could be potential evidence versus just everyday contamination?
Well, I tell you what, when you work a case like this, Tony, and you go in, you are taking everything. You're erring on that side of complete caution. In other words, you don't want to miss anything. So anything you see that even might be blood or bodily fluid or a pet hair that could be relevant, you are taking that all. And, you know, we've seen crime scenes where they haven't done that, and that's never good.
The Elantra, we know, was photographed, and it had some white powdery residue on it from processing. We also heard from investigators that the car was basically disassembled. And obviously, yes, they did some more disassembling when they went through to try and get anything out of it. What does that tell you about someone? And how often is it that a perpetrator is able to literally disassemble the car to such a level that they're not able to really get much of anything out of the vehicle, which, I mean, as far as we know, there really wasn't much found within the confines of that vehicle in terms of any sort of DNA or anything, really.
Well, there were so many of us, Tony, that said, mm-hmm. listen, and this was based on our experience, right? You can cover up a lot, but you can't cover up typically blood that would spatter down between that seat or on that gear shift or on those pedals if it was on your feet. You can't cover up everything. Well, you know what? Brian Koberger proved us all wrong because he went to the nth degree to disassemble that car and make sure every crevice and cranny was thoroughly cleaned. And as far as that, you know, kind of that spray of where they process, I think, you know, I was trying to make the point, fingerprints, DNA, or was he really looking for, were they also looking for bleach and cleaning mm-hmm. solvents? That's what really, I believe, they were looking for more than anything, is to show cleanup products being used as opposed to fingerprints or anything like that. I mean, I've dusted for fingerprints before. It typically isn't that hot mess you see there. I think it was for other things they were looking for.
And what do we know about that yet? Do we have any of that data in terms of what, you know, what they did find, what they didn't find in terms of cleaning supplies and such? Obviously, you know, I remember back when they emptied a lot of the stuff out of that apartment, and we were all looking at, like, they had trucks full of stuff they were taking out of there. If I remember, there was mattresses and things. But I mean, when they take all that out and they go and take a look at it, and obviously the trial never took place, do we know yet what was all found exactly after examination in the home of Koberger?
Well, it's interesting because all we know really is what Ann Taylor said mm-hmm. in one of her motion responses or motions. That's what we know, her paperwork filed. And remember, this caused a huge, you know, incensed sort of statement. Because basically the prosecution was saying, whoa, 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 I thought everything was sealed and we had a gag order and you were finessing information really underneath that gag order by putting it in your motions and in your responses. And essentially in that's when she got to make this huge statement. Listen, there was no DNA found anywhere. Mm-hmm. I think what she wrote, I think it was DNA. I don't think she went so far to say as bodily fluids. I recall DNA. And again, that was a big moment. But other than that, Tony, that's all we really know.
I mean, could there be more out there? Could there be more that we just don't know? I mean, there was speculation for a long time. You know, was there animal hair in his apartment from the dog at King Road? Was there anything else? Are there still more pieces to this puzzle that have not yet dropped out of the box yet?
Well, I think, Tony, we all anticipated that happening. And so far, it hasn't come up. really, we still have the backbone of this case being the PCA. Mm-hmm. Adding to that a little bit, you know, the search of Amazon and him purchasing the was truly spelled out in that PCA. And I think there's been very little to really bolster their case beyond that. But we haven't seen the lab results. We have not seen anything from the FBI yet. So there's so much we haven't seen.
I guess the question is why? And will we?
Well, Tony, I think it'll take a while. Remember, at least according to the court, meaning Judge Hippler, he said, listen, nothing is getting out into the public until I have a chance to review. Now, do I think that's Judge Hippler looking at all of these terabytes of information? No. I think he has a staff and other people helping. But the bottom line is that's what he said. He doesn't want a lot going out without their review. So that makes it difficult. We also know, you know, now mm-hmm. that a lot won't possibly come out because the families are upset. They don't mm-hmm. want these crime scene pictures and more pictures, anything bloody, anything of their kids coming out, which I can hardly blame them. I've said, sure. Even if I see them, I'm not putting them up. Yeah. That's at least the dignity that I think they deserve and they've asked for.
And that's a big thing because we keep seeing stuff like that popping out. I have not witnessed anything bloody. I don't know if it's out there. I don't really want to see it. I hope that we don't really see any of that coming out. And obviously we do have a lot of pushback from the families, and understandably so. I don't quite see the purpose other than just transparency with the public. And then here's our information, but there's obviously, I don't know that gruesome crime scene photos have any place in the public sphere. I guess if you really wanted them, you could, I don't know if for investigative purposes, find some way, but I don't really see what the purpose is of those getting out into the public anyhow.
Well, I think, Tony, the backlash on the other side is from media has to do with all the other crime scene photos we've seen. We've seen mm-hmm. Benet, you know, guillotined up. We've seen, or not guillotined, sorry, garroted up. Yeah. We've seen crime scene photos from the Menendez. All the famous cases and cases that aren't famous, we get to see crime scene photos. Madeline Soto, I mean, let me tell you, some of those things I can't unsee, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Really to do with his bizarre looking anatomy that was not normal. But I digress. My point is, and the point they're trying to make is, look, why are we covering all of this up or not allowing it to be out when it's out in all these other cases? And my point back to the people mm-hmm. is, listen, you don't have families screaming about this, going to the level of hiring attorneys to file motions. This is very important to them. Mm-hmm. So let's honor that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm all about transparency, but you know, with sense, common sense. I feel like most of the stuff that we've seen come out, at least the stuff I've viewed, they kind of block out anything that's been that could be in these videos. But yeah, I don't even bring up Soto. I don't even want to think about this in my mind. I have not seen that, but now I'm traumatized even thinking about it.
Sorry.
Let's talk about some of the interesting interactions that that Brian Koberger has had, some micro interactions that we're learning more and more about. In June of 22, Koberger reportedly was at a Pullman hotel and had a bit of an issue with a billing error, flipped out on the woman who was working it. Then it was corrected. Then suddenly he's calm, even flirting. And then the next day, runs into her in the hallway, and as every young man who wants to flirt with the cute lady that works at the hotel does, you bring up knives and sheaths in dark hotel hallways by yourself when you're alone with this woman you don't know. That seemed to be the motive of Brian Koberger. Thoughts on that, and thoughts on his, I mean, it seems this guy really had an obsession with knives and sheaths, with the amount of times we're hearing him talking about it with random folks.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing, Tony. It was churning in his mind for so long. This plan, this hope, this crime, this cathartic moment he had hoped to achieve. And you can't just not think about that, you know, when that's what you think about 24/7. So he makes a lot of what I would call almost spontaneous utterances. There's things that are going on in his brain and he just can't help himself. So I find it actually to be pretty normal with somebody that's obsessed.
Yeah, I mean that really is what it feels like. It's very obsessive behavior to be going on and on and on about these certain objects. This is before anything has even taken place that he's out there obsessing on it. Who knows what he was like if he had a conversation with him about a knife sheath. Neighbors also described tapping on their windows, and I found this interesting. If he's trying to not be seen, if he's trying to not be known, do you think the tapping has anything to do with Koberger, or is just kind of a little, maybe it is a red herring out there, and folks who were this close to the fire of Brian Koberger, you're going to think maybe anything odd, any odd noise could have been him.
I think it's a combination.
Yeah.
I think it possibly could be him. You know, we talked about other scenarios, whether they could have been him or not in, you know, last time we spoke. So this could have been him, maybe. But like you said, everybody now is thinking, and I know it's not now, but whenever they were interviewed are thinking, whoa, I think this could have been him. I remember this particular incident. I heard anything. But on the flip side of that pancake is, you know, I think he was certainly probably into peeping, could have been into burglarizing, and imagine that excitement you would feel then if you tapped and then, you know, kind of caused them to have a sensation of fear.
Like a recognition that you're there without them knowing that you're there. I mean, that I can see that being something very appealing to a Koberger-like person. There's been so much talk about, okay, see something, say something. A lot of people did. I mean, there was a lot that was said about Brian Koberger. But at the end of the day, you got to do something. But what can you do? What can you do with all these soft warnings that were out there about Brian Koberger? The sexist comments, the predatory-like behavior, but you know, there was nothing that I think would have necessarily landed him in jail unless they caught him, you know, peeping out someone's window. But the stuff that people were complaining about, yeah, he was a creepy, weird guy. And you can't predict the future, though. I mean, was there anything more that could have been done as everyone was seeing stuff and saying stuff?
I love the words you just used, soft warning. These are warning signs that people see about a lot of people. I mean, mm-hmm. There's a lot of weird cats out there. There's people who, you know, misogynistic, who treat women terribly bad, who say really random, odd things. And we always think, oh, well, that guy just socially is awkward. Mm-hmm. All of this summed up Brian Koberger. And when you look at the other people that do things like this, none of us say, oh my God, that's a mass murderer. I bet he's going to be a serial killer because it's so rare. It's so rare for those ingredients to equal mass murderer. And it's something we just don't really, it doesn't compute.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't always equal serial killer by any means, of course. I mean, the odds that you're going to go that far are pretty out there. But the odds that someone that's behaving in those ways might be doing other things, maybe not murdering, but other things. I don't even know how you'd quantify that actually, you know, could look into every single one of those. But we have there we go. I think we popped out and came back for a second. So many things that we would say might be soft warnings. Is Koberger a narrative tale? Is there anything we can learn from soft warnings? Or is it just, this is the world we live in? Do we need to do something more about these soft warnings so they're not so soft?
Well, he has such soft warnings, right?
Yeah.
Look at, as an example, the murderer that just got done with the Annunciation shooting. And mm-hmm. he had hard warnings, right? He had guns, bulletproof vests. He, you know, before the attacks was, you know, writing horrible things and putting it on YouTube and talking in Russian. So when you compared those, which I call those hard warnings, Kohlberger's weren't really. And I could see why people just overlook this behavior. But I will say, with the long running of the soft warnings, that his family certainly were aware of, like you said, it's not something that you say, okay, these weird behaviors equal they're going to be a serial killer. Yeah. But wow, maybe we should be looking out for getting this guy some help.
Doesn't it makes you question a lot of people? It makes you go, oh yeah, there's a that's a soft warning over there. That's one over here. There's soft warnings everywhere, and then it starts. You know, it can be a spiral where you just never leave your home anymore. But yeah, exactly. Well, fascinating. And as we continue to learn more and more about Brian Kohlberger, I'm sure there'll be more in the coming weeks. Let us know your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If that's where you're watching us, press subscribe so you don't miss any of our commentary on this and the many cases that we cover.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.